I'd like to welcome you to the Venus-Tesla Connection. Our website is hello-earth.com. Today is March 21st, 2012, and this website's dedicated to the man from Venus, Nikola Tesla. Tesla taught us how to make electricity, and he also taught us how to collect it for free. One of Tesla's direct disciples was Arthur H. Matthews from Lac Beauport, Canada. I found a short film on the web about Arthur Matthews. It was in French, and it told the story about Tesla's device called the Teslascope, built by Mr. Matthews, which allowed him to communicate with people from Venus. And today with us is a man who met Arthur Matthews maybe 40 years ago. Please welcome my very special guest from Quebec, Canada, Jean Casault, spelled C-A-S-A-U-L-T. Hello, Jean.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, how do you do?
Good. Well, welcome. So glad you have written back to me. I sent you a photograph, what I thought was Mr. Matthews, and you sent me these words back, and you said, what did you say? Where did I write that? It's him, without any doubt.
Exactly.
And it was thrilling to get that from you because it told me I was on the right track and at least I had a photograph of Arthur Matthews.
Yeah, yeah. I send you another one with the Teslascope too.
Yes. Yes, that's right. I have that on my site and I'll have that on this page for you. It's a much better photograph than I have of the same photograph of him. Looks like holding the Teslascope out in front of his house?
Yep. Yep. Oh.
And is this the house you remember? You were there?
I took the picture.
Oh, you took the picture.
Yeah.
I see. Well, I'll give you credit for that photograph on my site. Well, that's great.
Oh, yeah. I took the picture. It is possible that during this interview, my English goes south. Because I'm French, as you know, I wrote in French. My career has been on radio for 45 years, but only in French. I learned my English on your famous beaches, from Old Orchard to Daytona Beach. So I'll try to not sound like a surfer or a lifeguard.
You're actually doing really wonderful. My French is it's not anywhere near your English at all.
Yeah, but you don't have to learn French. French is only for us. English is for everybody.
I see. Well, thank you for that. You're very kind. But I wish I knew French when I was listening to this French video that you were involved with.
Yeah, I know that. I know that there is an English version has been done because I was not the producer of this video. By the way, I was implicated in the research and in the production, but I'm not the producer, not even the director. I was part of it, but that's it. And this is where I'm talking about my encounter with Arthur Matthews. Probably in 68, 69. And there's an English version of that video, but it's under Norton Mysteries. I don't know. I couldn't find it. I only could find the French version. That's weird.
I see. Well, I've looked. If you find it, that would be wonderful. Or
Global TV has it. Yeah, Global TV in Canada.
Oh, Global TV?
Yeah, Global TV has it, and... maybe if you call over there, you might have a chance. The series was called Norton Mysteries.
I see, Norton Mysteries.
Yeah, that's the name of the series we produce, and inside that mini series was the one about Matthews in English. So you have the translation in English.
I see. Well. Maybe a transcript if we can't find it, but Moser Mystery, Dozer Mysteries.
Norton Mysteries.
Oh, Norton Mysteries.
Mysteries from the North, you see? It's all about Canadian mysteries. So this is why they call it Northern, because we are at the north of North America. So Northern Mysteries.
Well, it really was a mystery, and I understand that when Arthur Matthews built this telescope, the Venusians communicated with him right away.
Well, the way it happened for me, I'm going to tell you what I know about Matthews, but directly from him. I'm not going to come back to a wall of lights or everything that could have been written on internet. You already have this, and I'm not going to lose your time with things that have already been said, okay? So I'll stick to the part I know because I was there. So what I can tell you is that Arthur Matthews has a friend of his who were at that time a father, a Dominican, Father Paul Bernier. And Father Paul Bernier was, like I said, a Dominican. You know what a Dominican is?
Dominican Republic?
No, Dominican. Those are monks.
Oh, I see.
Living in a monastery. You have the Franciscan, you have Benedict, you have many orders.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, in Catholic, one of them is Dominican. And they are like priests, if you want. So Father Paul Bernier was a Dominican. Are you Catholic?
No, I'm not. I really didn't go to any church when I was growing up.
Okay, so it's about church. It's a father, you know, when you say father?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so it's a father, it's a reverend, call it the way you want, but in a Catholic church, and he was an astronomer, and he was an electrical engineer.
Really?
Yeah. It was not the religious part that united those two men. It was the scientific and extraterrestrial question that united those two guys, okay?
Very interesting, yes.
So Father Paul Bernier, which is Paul, like Paul, and Bernier is spelled B-E-R-N-E-N-I-E-R, but anyway, I tried to Google it, and there's no way. I send you a picture of him, but that's mostly...
I'm looking at the photograph right now.
Yeah, and it's because it's in French. So in English, you won't find anything about Paul Bernier. He was always speaking French and working French and living in Quebec City. So I met this man, this father, because the way it happened for me to get myself involved in UFO business. It's a long story. I wrote a book about it. It's a long story. It's complex. And it's, to the eyes of many, it's unbelievable the way it happened. But anyway, this is not about me. I met Father Paul Bernier under special circumstances. And it was a very exciting moment for me because I was only 17, 18, not more. And I was at the beginning of my research in UFO, so we worked together. We talk a lot, many times. I met with him. He was in his monastery on Grande Allée Avenue in Quebec, and so it was thrilling. And one day, he talked to me about Arthur Matthews. Now I knew about him, but it was not. Something I didn't attach any importance at this time. But he explained to me that Mr. Matthews was his friend, that they were working together, and that he had a special a device to listen to conversation or listen to people from outer space. So when he said Venus, I was skeptical because nobody can live on Venus. So I say, Well, I didn't. So I didn't believe him. I said to myself, "Well, forget about this this Matthews guy because no one can live on Venus, you know."
Yes, that's what we hear.
Yeah, I know. So I let it go. But then he came back to me and he said something about a code he could give to me so that I can talk to them and they would answer me.
Oh.
UFO people. He didn't mention Venus this time, so I believed him. So he gave me the code. I used it and it worked. And this is what I'm reporting in my book, but it's in French, unfortunately. But there are two stories. The two time I used the code, and it was unbelievable. Sorry for my French, but I fell on my ass when it happened. I mean, it was.
I can totally understand how it would knock you over just to realize that you're talking to someone from Venus.
Well, it was not Venus, after all, and I never know where it come from. But I used the code, I talked to them, and I asked them to shut down a television station. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so for 2 hours, they shut it down, few seconds after I asked.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. And it was down for 2 hours. And the technician over there couldn't explain, and he says the first time that happened, it happened before, but for 2 minutes or 5 minutes, but 2 hours, it never happened. And I know it never happened after that.
I'm laughing because it's such a great story.
Oh, it is, and it's absolutely true. I mean, I'm not embellish it, I'm not change it, I'm not modify it. This is exactly how it happened.
Yes.
And for me, it was Father Paul Bernier was a god to me because of this code. But it worked another time, but that's it. It never worked after that. So it worked two times. And then when he talked to me back of Arthur Matthews, now I was ready to run there because Bernier has a lot of credibility, you know.
Yes.
Because he's the one who gave me the code. So if he's talking to me again about this Arthur Matthews character, I should listen this time. So I listened to him. He gave me the address of Arthur Matthews. He called him and he said, "This young man wishes to see you. Are you okay to receive him at your place?" Apparently, he said yes. So I went there the next weekend. I had a friend with me, and we got there in Lake Beauport, which is not far from where I live. I saw Matthews was from London because there was a confusion in my mind between Arthur Matthews and Grendel Matthews.
I see.
You probably heard of Grendel Matthews.
Yes, I have heard of Grendel Matthews, but you could tell us about him also.
Well, no, I don't know nothing about Grendel Matthews more than you can find on Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. I mean, all I know is he's a sort of a genius who makes some experiments that look like those of Tesla, including his death ray and stuff like that. But that's Grendel Matthews. He's known to be a kind of a genius in his electrical device he invented, but he was in England. I think he came in the United States once, but he never stayed here. He came back to London, and anyway. So
is he any relation to Arthur Matthews?
Not at all.
None at all. I see.
Oh no, he's not. This is a common name, Matthews, and Matthews was Canadian, and Arthur Matthews was Canadian, and Grendel Matthews was, like I said, an Englishman. You can see about him on Wikipedia. You spell his name, Grendel Matthews, and you'll see everything about him.
Yes, okay.
But Arthur Matthews was living in Lac Beauport, about 20 minutes from where I live. So we went there, and we were young at this time. Like I said, I was 17, 18. We didn't have a car and didn't have enough money to go there in a taxi, so we went with our bicycle.
Yes.
Oh yeah, we went there on our bicycles, and I had a bag with me with my little Kodak in it, and that's it. So we met Arthur Matthew. He was old. He was old at that time. It was an old man, very very polite, very friendly, but it looks like he was prepared for us. He had something he agreed to meet us, and as soon as he began to talk, you couldn't interrupt him.
That's great.
Yeah, it was like, I'm going to tell you my story, and here it goes. And it goes for hours. I mean, and he talked to us about his meeting with those Venusian, everything you can see in the book Wall of Light. So that he met them, he showed us the place where the mountain was, and how he listened to them further on with the telescope. He got it into his place and bring the thing out, and you can see it. It looks like a telescope, but it's a telescope, and it's a listening device. It's not a telescope. It looks like it, but it's not. He didn't make it work because he said that he was not the one who make it work. It was them.
I see.
So he couldn't push a button, so we listened to something. It was like, if they want to talk to us, they will. If they don't, it won't work. So, but he didn't try nothing. He just put it there. I took a picture that you have, and that's it. And after that, I realized that I had not more film in my stupid camera, and that's the only picture I could take. So...
Well, that's wonderful you have that picture.
Oh, yeah, because, I was mad because I said to my friend, I don't understand. I'm sure I had a full at least 12 shots in that camera. And, in 68, 69, it was not the camera we have now. Eh?
Yes.
So, and it was a black and white only. I mean, I'm talking like if I were 200 years old now. So
I mean, black and white is still beautiful to take photographs with.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it's old stuff. Nobody uses these cameras anymore.
Oh, I know. Film is passé now.
But. Yeah, exactly. Obsolete. So then we saw weird, I would say weird equipment in a small shed he had over there. He had a shed outside his house. You know what shed is? You know what shed is? Okay.
Yes, I do.
Okay. No, I just want to make sure I have the good word.
You're doing terrific. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. So we went into the shed, and there was these equipment, but I didn't make sense. I mean, I couldn't identify it. And he didn't spoke about it. He just let us look. He didn't explain, probably because he knew we wouldn't understand, because he was an engineer. He was talking his own with his own words. He didn't make any, how can I say that? He didn't change his vocabulary because of us.
Yes.
So we couldn't understand. I mean, the sphenoid and linoid and stuff like that. So I was amazed, but I didn't know why I was amazed, but I was. And they were coil. It looks like copper. It looked like big spring. I mean, it's hard to me because, like I said, I was young. I looked at that. He didn't explain us what it was, just saying, this is my laboratory. But he told us a story that I've confirmed later on with an historian. In those days, Lake Beauport, now today is a rich and famous surrounding of Quebec, but in those times it was a ski center. There were many ski resorts over there, because Lake Beauport it's a lake, but people refer to that lake because of the mountains around, okay?
I see.
So, in fact, the big vessel he saw has land and was very close to the mountain. He insists on that many times to show us the place in any way, but it happened 40 years before, so there was no trace anymore. But anyway, and those ski resorts were using in the 40s and 50s, were using many electrical devices to operate their machine to bring the skiers uphill, okay?
Yes.
So he said to me that many times he was going there because he heard that the whole shebang was not working. You know, when no more electricity, how do you call that?
A power failure.
Okay. So there was many times power failure in those resorts. So he went up there and he went to the technician, the director, the technician, and he said, what happened? And he said, well, we don't know. We have a power failure and it goes out and we don't know how it happened. So he said, show me your, the place where everything is, the electrical.
Yes, his fuse box.
Yeah, fuse box. Okay. So, but it's bigger than that. But anyway, he went there and he said, oh, I see. I'll pay for that. And they said, what do you mean you pay for that? You didn't do that. He says, oh, yes, I did. Oh, yes. Oh. From my house. They said, what? He said, yes, I did it from my house. I made an experiment at 2:15, and I knew it would have consequences not too far from here, and here you go. I blew all your equipment. And he did that 3 times.
Oh.
Yeah, so he was doing something there that is what I would say was Tesla-like, you know?
Yes.
He was doing experiment based on Tesla experiment. And it's strange because Grindel Matthews did the same. But anyway, like I said before, there's no relation between the two of them. There's many, many cats that I'll call meow. So Matthews was paying, imagine that, he was paying from his own pocket the replacement of the equipment because I don't know if they accepted, but he said he was willing to pay for the equipment because he was responsible for it. And later on, during the production of the video you were talking about, I met an historian of Lake Beauport, historian who remember that thing and confirm it.
Oh, wow.
So for me, it was and he said something about it. I think in the on the video, I'm not sure, but the thing is that Matthews was he was the weirdo of the place.
Hmm.
He was considered, like a sorcerer. You know, something you don't. You don't let your kids playing around his house. You know what I mean?
Yes, I certainly know what you mean. And he's blowing out equipment how many miles away?
Oh, I would say 3 or 4 miles.
3 or 4 miles away. And he looked at the equipment. He knew exactly it was his. He caused the damage.
His misdoing, yeah. He knew it.
That was very nice of him to... Yeah. Fix it.
Yeah, he fixed it because he knew it was good. He could have said nothing. He could have stayed at home and say, I did it. And that's it.
That's right.
But no, he was a, and I don't think he was trying to destroy equipment. It was only a consequence, as a, like we can say, a second effect, you know, second effect?
Yeah, second effect. Do you know what he was trying to do with his equipment?
Always the same thing, to transfer energy without
wires.
Yeah, exactly. The same way we can transfer image and sound, he was trying to transfer energy, like Tesla did many years ago.
Yes, he did in Colorado Springs, and he also did up in with Major Sanford.
Yeah, Sanford. I talked to someone related to Sanford.
Oh, yes? Oh, you'll have to tell us about that also.
Yeah.
But so Arthur Matthews' equipment, he was sending electricity through the earth, and their equipment just blew out because they were receiving the electricity.
Yeah, probably too much that they could handle.
Too much.
That's why they just blew.
Do you know how Arthur was producing the electricity, or was it just coming over his wires?
Well, like I said, this is the kind of thing I could discuss with you now because I'm 62 and I learned a lot. But when I was 17, I probably looked stupid. And he looked at us and he says, "Okay, Father Bernier, send those two kids here. It's okay, I'll talk to them, but that's it." Because we were not, we were looking at him with big eyes round, trying to understand what the hell was going on and who is this guy talking to us about people on Venus, because he put it back, Venus. So we were looking at him and we were not sure if he was crazy or not at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably felt it and didn't want to go further with us. We were kids.
Right.
So let me tell you, if I had two kids on my front lawn and they want to know what happened with the code that Bernier gave to me, and they were looking like me, if I were crazy, I'd probably send them away.
Right.
Huh?
Right, exactly. Because
I would say, hey, get back to your video game and don't bother me again, see?
Yeah, right.
So he was gentle enough not to told us this, but still, we were kids. And he didn't want to lose his time explaining to us what exactly he was doing on a scientific point of view or the engineering point of view. You see? So for him, we were just kid, but I mean, it was I met him many years ago in 1981 this time, because I was involved in a metaphysical institute, and my mentor and I went to see, he said, we're going to go see a man who knows a lot about stars and star people and everything. So I said, oh, what's his name? He says, Arthur Matthews. I said, oh, Jesus, I know him. I met him when I was 17. And he looked at me and he was jealous. So we went to see Mr. Matthews a second. He didn't remember me, but doesn't matter. I was 31 when I met him a second time, so he couldn't remember me. But anyway, we talked. But it was a very God-related discussion. It has nothing to do with star people, Tesla, or whatever. And he was very, very old, of course. And his voice was so low. I couldn't understand much of what he was saying, and it was in English, but my English was not that good at this time, so I had trouble to listen and didn't want him to repeat what he was saying. So when we met him for the first time, his voice was okay. He was pronouncing correctly. But when I met him in 81, he was more slurring.
Yes.
He was talking like that. But I couldn't understand a hell of a word. So, but I know it was God-related, so something like that, religious-related. Mm-hmm. He was a very religious man, you know that, eh?
Yes, I do.
He wrote, I saw many articles he wrote.
Yes, many articles he wrote. Oh, did we lose Sean? Hold on for a moment. Okay, we had trouble there for a second, but we're back. All right, go ahead, Jean.
Okay, well, what I was saying is that when he wrote articles for papers, he wrote about cigarettes, tobacco, he wrote about politics and religion, he wrote about many things, and he was a very harsh man, very rude. He was, you know what I mean by that?
You mean Arthur Matthews was rude?
Oh, yeah, rude. Okay, maybe it's not the good word. It was tough.
Okay, tough. Yes, I understand.
Yeah, he was tough. He didn't make any concession. Mm-hmm. If he thought turning right there was the thing to do, he would say this is the only way to do it. That's it. No concession.
That's good. He knew what he was. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, all right, absolutely. Oh yeah. He was kind of an editorialist, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So he made many things in this way. But that's all I know from Mr. Matthews. Like I said, I saw him twice in my life. Of course, because it was associated to an event that happened to me because of his friend, Father Paul Bernier. For me, it's an event that stayed in my mind for the rest of my life. So my encounter with him became more and more important because the more I was going into UFO business, the more I heard about Matthews, you know. And everybody was talking about Matthews and everybody was saying, hey, you met him? Wow. I said, yeah, so? And I didn't understand exactly the importance of that. And but anyway, yes, I met him. It was a great encounter the first time. The second time, more or less, because like I said, it was more mumbling than talking, so I couldn't understand exactly what he was saying. And he was not talking to me anyway. So, this allowed me to put his figure, his face, into my mind so that I could recognize him on the picture you sent me.
Yes.
Because it seems like it was the same time that I met him the second time.
I see. And you said you went there with another man when you were 31. Was that to do that film about him?
No. No, that has nothing to do with it. No, the second encounter was not related anywhere. Like I said, it was not important. It was only, it was fun because the guy who wants to talk to him was so impressed that I met him 15 years before. That was the funny part. But after that, like I said, he was mumbling more than he was. He was very old at that time. I mean, he would probably have been 80-something or 90. Because he died in 86, eh? 86, 87?
Oh, yes. I didn't know.
Yeah.
86 or 87.
Yeah.
And so this man that you went back there, he was impressed that you knew Arthur Matthews.
Yeah.
How did he know Arthur Matthews and...
Oh, it was Matthews was well known by that time. I mean, everybody knew Arthur Matthews. Anyone who is into a UFO business or metaphysical or stuff like that knew about him.
And Arthur Matthews showed you in his backyard where this the X1, the craft came down?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it sounded to me like you were referring that this was many, many years when you first met him when you were 17, that it sounded like he had this craft come visit him for 10 years, but this was, how long ago was that before you met him when you were 17? If that's...
No, I don't understand you.
I'm sorry, I didn't ask you a very, very clear way. When you were 17 years old and met Arthur Matthews for the first time...
It was in 1968, I'd say.
I see, 1968.
Yeah.
And did he give you his book?
Not at that time. Not at that time, because I think it went out in 70.
I see, in 1970.
Yeah.
And the
book, The Wall of Light, is dated 1970. And I met Matthews in 1968. So he was probably in the process of writing it when we met.
I see. So in other words, this happened to him years before he started writing The Wall of Light.
Well, I would say he was in the process of writing it.
I see. So while it was happening to him, because when I go through The Wall of Light, it sounds like while it was happening to him, he would just keep notes and put this paper together.
Yeah, but the Venusian spaceship, the X-12, came to see him, but it was not in 70. It was 30 years before.
That's what I say, 30 years before.
Oh yeah, in the 40. During, I think it's 1941 or 1942, I think.
Yes, that's right. I remember now. That's right. It was way back then. So he had this telescope, and was this in his house that he brought outside for you to take a photograph of?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Was it heavy, or did it seem like it was empty?
It was hollow.
Hollow.
You could see he didn't let us touch it, but it was.
He didn't let you touch it. Okay.
Because I told you we were kids.
Right.
So he didn't want us. Maybe if we have been adults, we could have hold it in our hands, something like that. But we were kids, and he saw that we came with our bikes, with our bicycle. So he didn't think of us as adults. But the thing is that we could saw it. It was like a brand new type of equipment, well done, well made. You could see it was not done by an amateur, but it didn't seem heavy because he handled it very lightly.
I see. Were there headphones or was there a microphone? How did he know that they were contacting him with his telescope?
I don't know. It may. He said something about a sound. It make a sound, which is like when your phone rings. So you pick up the call, and it seems he did the same. He make a sound, and he was picking up what they were telling him. But he didn't talk about the conversation he would have with them. He didn't go that far.
I see. Well, do you remember if this telescope just made a sound and then he went in the backyard and they appeared, or did they talk to him with this telescope?
That part, I'm sorry, I don't remember.
I see.
I don't remember.
I'm just wondering about that. And
I think he said it clearly in his book, though. If I do remember, I read the book a long time ago, but I think he's precise about it, where the telescope come from, and when, and how he used it. I think he talked about it.
Okay, now a little earlier, Jean, you said that Arthur gave you a code. Oh no, it was
no.
Father Brenner.
Yeah, it's Father Paul Bernier.
Father Paul Bernier gave you a code.
Yes.
And what did you? I mean, how did you work that code?
By a flashlight in the sky.
A flashlight in the sky?
Yeah, with the Morse code. I had to send four letters in the sky many times, and then write with Morse code what I wanted. It took me almost an hour to ask them to shut down the television station. It took me a half an hour, I think, because Morse code was not my style, you know.
I understand. So you took the Morse code and you figured out what you wanted to say.
Yeah.
And you flashed this flashlight just up in the sky?
Yeah. I was on the top roof of my house, and I send these four letters. Do you want to know what those four letters are?
Yes, you can. Well, if you tell me, you'll be telling everyone.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't mind. It's in my book anyway. So all the people have to do is try it. If it works, I'll be happy to know about it. Because for me, it works two times, and then not anymore. I don't know why it stopped, but it didn't work anymore. So the four words are A, F, F, A.
A, F, F, A.
Yeah, AFA.
AFA.
Yeah.
And you put
and
that...
By the way, be careful, because it is also, I discovered that, it is also the device, the slogan of a motorcycle gang called Hell's Angel. You know the Hell's Angel?
Yes, I've heard of them. I know of them.
Okay, so Hell's Angel have the word AFA. It means something totally different, of course. But what I mean, if you go on Google and you put AFA words, you're going to end up to Hell's Angel site. So that's what I mean. But in those time, AFFA was supposed to be the name of a commander aboard one of those ships.
I see. And then you just decided to see if, since you may have had contact with him, thought, well, let me see if they can shut down the television station, and then I'll know it works.
Yeah, exactly. And when it happened, I was so thrilled.
Thrilled.
So thrilled that I was running in the house like crazy, and my father wanted to know what was going on. And I couldn't explain. I couldn't talk. So I rushed myself back on the roof. And there I shout thank you very loud. And I realize I forgot my flashlight down there. So I come back down, pick up the flashlight, came back on the roof, and try to find the piece of paper on which I put the word, the code Morse, the Morse code. Because I didn't know by heart how it works, you know. I mean, it's not easy. So I found the word the word thank you. Because and by the way, Father Paul Bernier told me to talk to him in English.
I see.
So that part I was surprised, but he said to me, talk to him in English, not in French. Weird, eh?
Yes. So,
yeah, no, that part is weird, because in 1968, my English was not that good, so I had to formulate very precisely what I wanted. But I know how to spell thank you at that time, so I spell it, and there was this flash of light that came out in the sky just after I said thank you.
Oh, really?
Oh, no. I mean, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, that was great, and I was very, very, very happy about it. You could imagine.
I can just imagine.
Yeah, and it happened a second time. This time I was with four people, four of my investigators, because I had a group at that time. So it happened 2 years after, in 69. I was with my four investigators. We were in a place called Vimeridge, near to a small town. And it was, I think it was 4 o'clock in the morning. And we were watching the sky, because in the area there has been lots and lots and lots of UFO. So we were there because of that. So we were investigating, talking to people, and like any kind of investigation. And after supper, we went to that place where there has been a lot of observation, watching the sky and talking and everything, having coffee. And it was cold, so sometime we were watching from the car, inside the car. And one of us was in his car, and the three others, including me, were outside. We're talking and looking at the sky. And suddenly they said, you should do the AFA code. So, no, it's not true. They said we should do something to attract their attention. And I said, and it's then I told them the story about the AFA code. And they were, they wouldn't believe me. So they said, do it again. And I tried, and it didn't work. I was so mad, that I shout to the sky, if you don't do something right now, I quit. I'll do no more investigation in UFO. I'm not going to write any more book. I wrote 13 books. And no more. That's it. I quit. Huh? And the second I do that, there were six beautiful, wonderful, big, luminous flash in the sky.
Wow.
Impossible to reproduce, impossible to be natural. But this time I was not alone. There were three other guys with me.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But more than that, there was the guy in the car. So the guy in the car got out and say, what the fuck was this? I'm sorry, but he said it this way.
That's okay.
Oh, no, he was, I mean, he was, and he repeated three times. So I'm not going to do it three times. Mm-hmm. But, it was not something we imagine, you know. It clearly happened. And when we told him that it was because I was shouting and threatening them to quit, he was looking at me and he was afraid of me. He was scared. And we didn't talk about it for hours, and I never saw those guys again. I think they were afraid. They were scared. They were afraid of me, I think.
I see. And did you say these people were like UFO people interested in the subject matter, or were they just...
No. Of course they were. They were investigators.
Investigators.
Yeah, they were with me. They were with my organization. In 1967, I put an organization. We had 300 members, and I had almost 40 investigators all over the province, and it was big. I had a magazine. I have everything, and it goes on and on. And these guys were one of my best investigators.
Wow!
After that session, I never heard about them.
I see.
They like disappear.
Yeah, your magazine. If you have one of your magazines, you could maybe scan the cover and I'll post it on your HTML page.
Yeah, I already have that. So you won't believe the name I gave to the magazine.
Oh, tell me.
AFA.
Oh, yes. Very good.
Of course. It was AFA. Oh, yeah. I have it there somewhere. I'll send it to you.
Yes, I would. I'm so thrilled that you had film in your camera. You know, it's too bad you didn't have a video camera with audio back in those days and filmed Arthur Matthews for an hour or two.
It didn't exist.
I know it didn't exist.
No, well, it didn't exist at this time. In 1968, because my father was really into photography, I had a camera because at this time, kids of 17 years old didn't have a camera with them.
Yes.
It was unusual for a kid to have a camera.
Yeah, well, it was great that you had a camera. And do you have anything of Arthur's? Did he give you anything or?
No. An artifact, something like that?
Well, or even any articles that you have of his?
No. No. I don't have. I have nothing of him.
And you said you wrote 13 books?
Yeah.
Those are UFO books?
Metaphysical. And ufology.
I see.
Yep.
Well, I'm sorry I can't read French.
Yeah, I know, but that's the way it is.
I know, that's the way it is. Well, this is really amazing. And this other person you were with, this other boy when you were 17, he probably remembers.
Not too much. No, not too much. He's a nuclear physicist now.
I see. Well, he was impressed with what he saw at Arthur's, and
no. For him, he was not involved too much in those days. So he went with me because we were friends. That's it.
I see. And was this meeting with Arthur Matthews when you were 17? This is probably what really sparked your interest in UFOs?
Oh, no. It was done a long time before.
Oh.
I was already into UFO business when it happened for at least 2 years. Because I began in December 96, 66.
Yes.
And this encounter probably happened at the end of 68, beginning of 69, I would say. So it me and the AFA code 68 69, it's around the same time, but I was already into this.
I see. So you already knew this subject matter a little bit when you met Arthur Matthews.
In fact, I was the expert in Quebec.
Aha.
I was giving conference, I was giving lecture, I was on TV, I was on radio, I was everywhere.
I see.
Oh yes. This was big. This was really big. I send you. You should have it now. I send you the picture you were requesting. The magazine.
Oh yes. All right. After the recording's over, so it doesn't interfere with the audio.
Okay.
Well, this has been. Wonderful having you, Jean.
Okay, my pleasure.
And so you were really doing a lot of conferences and a magazine on the subject, and
I'm still on. And since I've quit the radio, which is not true, the radio quit me.
I see.
Since I'm free, if I can say.
Mm-hmm.
I've wrote 4 books in 3 years.
I see.
Which is my editor told me to slow down a little bit. because I have a fifth one that will go out in August. And he said, please stop. Let me breathe. you know, it goes very well, very, very well. I have my own experience. I'm on Facebook and everywhere, so it goes well. But I'm not very well known outside Quebec because of the language. French is a killer. I mean, that's it. Mm-hmm. You speak French. When you do a business, a UFO business in Quebec, it stays in Quebec. Uh-huh. Nothing, nothing goes out. It's a small country. It's a very, very small. A province is like a state, you see. Mm-hmm. So it's a state if you want, but it's very small, only 6 million people. Not very, we're not an intellectual people. We're not France, you see. Over there, everybody is reading a lot of books and things like that, not here. So it's very hard to make your books known, and it takes time, and it's not like in the U.S. You know, when you're in the U.S., you have an agent that works for you. He goes on, and he publishes your book with an editor, and you can sell a thousand and thousand and thousands of them. If it's a good book, mm-hmm. here, even if it's a good book, you don't sell thousand and thousand, you sell hundreds and hundreds. So it's terrible.
Well, it's good to get your experience out there. And was your UFO encounter, was that with people from Venus?
I don't know.
I see.
I don't know. I never talked to them. They shut down the TV station and that's it. and they show up lights and they made a light show so that I don't quit. So I didn't quit, and I'm still here. I still have some experience, but it has nothing to do with Venus, because I don't believe there are people on Venus. In this dimension, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, Arthur Matthews said they came to him for 10 years in his backyard.
I know he did. I know he was not crazy. Didn't sound crazy at all. But somehow, I don't know how you can live on that planet.
Well, yes, from what we're told by our scientists, it's extremely hot. But
I believe them because it's very close to the sun. It's very, very close to the sun. A lot more closer than us.
I know. Even if we were, it seems like even if we were 1,000 miles closer, it would be, some places on Earth would be too hard to live on.
Exactly. We are exactly where we're supposed to be to have a jewel planet like this one. So I think it's believable that nobody could survive on the surface of Venus, maybe inside, maybe in another dimension, but associated with Venus. That's possible. But clearly that there would be cities on Venus, Jesus, those guys wouldn't have blonde hair like they said they have. It would have burn hair.
Right. Your book, The Wall of Light,
this is not my book.
Oh, well, I know that, but you probably have a copy of The Wall of Light.
No, not anymore.
Oh, not anymore?
No, I lose it.
I see.
I lose it when I don't remember one, but I had to move so many times in my life that each time I lose pieces of equipment or literature or something like that, and Wall of Light just vanish. I don't know where it goes.
I see. Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, that's okay.
But
I write my own now.
Yes. Well, send us a link to your books or your website. I have your website.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, I can't read French, so it's, I can look at the pictures.
Oh, yeah. You click on the books over there, and you're going to have the full image.
All right. Well, Jean, thank you so much for recording with me and telling your story of Arthur Matthews. And
it's a pleasure.
Extremely interesting. This has been wonderful. And
yeah.
And if you think of other things, you please contact me, and we'll.
No problem. And when this thing is on your site, just give me the link so I put it on my own.
I will. Very, very happy to.
No problem.
Okay, stay on the line. I'll just close and thank you for coming on, and I'll talk with you again, but stay on the line.
Okay,
thank you, Sean. Okay, so long.
Okay.